Good morning, everyone. Welcome to Solutions for the Underaffiliated, a show to help frustrated people by taking a positive spin on very serious challenges. Today, we're going to be talking about education. Today, we have Shanna Peel, who is the president of the Buncombe County Association of Educators. Shanna, tell us a little bit about yourself and the Association of Educators.
I am born here in Asheville, raised here in Buncombe County Schools. I attended Irwin and graduated in 2004. I went to UNC Asheville, got my master's in Western North Carolina. I have three kids. They go to Asheville City Schools, Buncombe County Schools, and one at a charter school. So I'm dabbling in all the school districts here in our mountains. Just really excited to serve as the president for Buncombe County Association of Educators. I'm a special education teacher normally, so I'm out of the classroom this year to serve our public school workers in our union.
What do you think about education, all the things you're working on? What comes to mind? Like, what's on your mind these days?
So I first got into education because I had some amazing teachers. Specifically, I wanted to be a math teacher after I had a really influential math teacher in high school. And I was guided towards the Teaching Fellows program. And throughout that program, I got a really broad look at the education system, not only in North Carolina. We toured schools all over North Carolina, but also across the country, and even had the opportunity to look at some schools in England. And it just really fascinated me, the different types of schools that we see and the different types of services that are available to our kids. My passion for education really started leaning towards advocacy as I became a special education teacher, and I was trying to get my students services that they needed. And I was running into some roadblocks because there are some limitations on what we're able to provide our students based on what we have available at our schools.
How does the school system get funded, and how do you get those resources?
Right. So primarily, our school system is funded through the state. So I would say like the bulk, the majority of our funding comes from North Carolina General Assembly. We do get some federal funding. It's fairly low compared to what the state gives us. And some funding comes locally from our county. So Buncombe County Commission.
Is there tax? Do taxpayers contribute to the funding of the education in North Carolina?
Absolutely. That comes from the state funding comes from taxpayer money. And locally, it would come from local taxes. The per pupil funding in Buncombe County is $11,483. Asheville City, it's per pupil $14,000.
So over a year, though, and that's over a year, right? That's so $11,000 for a person,
correct,
a kid per year. Is that enough? And what's missing?
It's definitely not enough. If you were to look at how North Carolina education funding starting back in like the 60s, 70s, post Jim Crow era, and then take that trajectory, the funding, and adjust it for cost of living, that sort of thing, we would expect our per pupil expenditure to be closer to $20,000 per student. So we're currently like the average across the state. When you take out the federal and local dollars, it's just under $10,000 per pupil.
Right.
So we're about half of what we should be.
What's missing? We all pay taxes. What's my tax going to? What do I get?
I would say that this question has been raised by many people.
So it's not the first time you've heard that.
It's not. And in fact, it's been raised the North Carolina Supreme Court in the 90s. So some people might have heard of the Leandro case. And the Leandro decision came about in North Carolina Supreme Court in 1997. And the court ordered our state to fully fund education because the state constitution guarantees every child the right to a sound basic education. And most recently, just in November of 2022, the court again ordered our General Assembly to transfer funds to support the Leandro plan and fully fund our schools. So right now we're waiting for all that to happen and for that money to come to us.
This is in the 90s.
Right. Isn't that shocking?
So we're talking 30 years ago.
Yes.
If my math is
so
right.
You'd think there'd be a sense of urgency, and maybe we're not. Maybe we can get that sense of urgency a little bit by saying, okay, what specifically are the gaps, and what specifically are there programs, Are we talking about, you know, are we talking about band instruments? Or are we talking about special education teachers? Are we talking about bus? I mean, what exactly is it we're talking about?
Oh, yeah. We're talking about all of the above, really. I believe that the funding is, it could all be boiled down to the people. When we don't have enough funding, we can't fund enough people to do all the things that need to happen in our schools. We don't have enough classroom teachers. We don't have enough bus drivers. We don't have enough people to run the cafeteria or the office, do the clerical work. It puts a strain on the whole staff.
And then people want to sit there and say, wait a second, I need to have police there and all these security people because maybe someone might come in with a gun and, you know, why don't you have somebody doing that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Part of that is also, I think it comes back to salary. If we are paying our behavior special ed assistants who are tasked with working one-on-one with our students with the most high behavior needs to come into our schools and work for $15 an hour to essentially try not to get beat up by these students, are we paying them enough to attract these folks to the jobs and then actually have these jobs staffed?
What do you say to parents who just don't get it? Like, they can't, it doesn't compute. It's like, well, I don't need those resources. How does that affect their kid?
Well, public education is it's a public good. And we need to all function in a society where we have everybody working together. And when one of us suffers, we're all going to suffer.
Yeah, and that makes perfect sense. Yeah. I just think it's important. It is a public good. And so we, as a society, it seems like what you're saying is we should all want it to operate in the best interest of everybody. And the only way to do that is to have these other resources. What's it like for a teacher who's in the system when you're low on funding? Kind of like business, what happens is things don't get done when you don't have resources. But if you're on a low budget, what you've got is also hamstrung. Is that true in teaching? Or do you feel like you've got everything you need and, you know, you're compensated?
All you need to do is look at the GoFundMes of the teachers who don't have their basic office supplies in the beginning of the school year
to answer that question. Let's talk about that.
So, yeah. I mean, it's crazy.
So bring it to life. Like, you're here. Talk about that.
Yeah, I funded my classroom desks, my chairs for my special ed students that are special. They wobble so they can have that kinesthetic piece to help them pay attention. I funded that through Donors Choose. I funded my books, my paper, my Velcro for making visuals for my special ed students through Donors Choose. So yeah, we don't have our basic supplies. As a classroom teacher, well, in the special ed setting, I have never been able to be caught up on work because there is so much work within that one role that it's more than would typically be put on one person. So our schools really are just stretched to the max in terms of people power. Everyone's putting in like way more hours than they probably should be for their mental health or their physical health.
It's a labor of love.
Right. It is a labor of love. And that's, I think, why we're often looked at as you can do one more thing because we do it for the children. And while that's true, we also have our own well-being and our own children to think about.
One of the things that's important for folks, we're talking about this, is it impacts your home life. And you don't need to go into too much detail, but would you be willing to share a little bit? Because I think that's what a lot of folks don't get. It's this, oh, well, we hear about teacher salaries. We've heard those stories about, oh, I bring my work on home, at home, I've got to fund it myself.
Yeah, well, I've shared publicly before that I am a classroom teacher paid as a ninth year teacher. So my salary is public. I have a master's degree. I'm not compensated for that in North Carolina.
Right.
They took that away a few years ago, right before I got my master's.
We pay lawyers for their extra credentials and their hard work. And we pay doctors certainly for that. In the state of North Carolina, make sure I've got this right. We don't pay people for getting an advanced degree to take care of our children's education for the future of the country. Do I have that right?
Right. And I think some of that could be that like a misunderstanding of what teachers actually do, but right. It is a profession. And there have been studies that say a teacher makes more decisions on a daily basis than a rocket scientist. I mean, there are lots of things going on in a classroom. So, you know, with my salary, the supplement I get from the county, I have three children. I have a husband who works full time at a fairly decent paying job, according to Asheville standard. And I cannot afford to put my kids on the benefits that we get from the state. It would cost well over $1,000 a month for me to put my three children on that. So they are on Medicaid.
Wait a second. So your employer offers insurance, health insurance, but you can't afford you have to pay into that and you can't afford to pay into that. You have to pay the whole thing, or do they supplement any of the premium?
I have to pay like a small amount for my personal insurance, but for my kids, I have to pay for three children, it would be about $1,200 a month.
That's just shocking to me, because normally when you have a job, you have single coverage or you have family coverage, and that's a huge disparity.
It is. And it's obviously not affordable on my salary if you look it up. And so, yeah, because of that, we also are qualified right now for WIC because one of my children is still under five.
That's a food program for women, infants, and children.
That's right. And we qualify for EBT. My kids are on free and reduced lunch. And there are occasions when I go through at Bounty and Soul and I pick up a food box because it's hard to make it to the end of the month. So if I am in this position as a certified classroom teacher with my master's degree, then I am just really concerned about our classified staff, those people who pick up our kids and at the bus stop and make sure they get safely to school and home, or the people who are cooking our kids a nutritious lunch, or the folks who are teacher's assistants in the classroom. How are they making it? How many jobs are they working just to get by?
How do you think teachers are portrayed in the media?
What's interesting is in the media, it seems like more and more people are actually mistrustful of the education system and the teachers. And I'm sure some of that mistrust is placed in this fact that we are underfunded. And so they're not seeing the same types of things that they expect from North Carolina public schools. However, the overwhelming majority of Americans, it shows through polls, do trust teachers and they do support public education. So while we see these flashy stories in the media about parents who are upset over curriculum or things like that, for the majority of Americans, they really do support our schools.
Shannon, when you see what the barriers are, and the barriers could be anything from regular people not knowing what the situation, it could be related to the way that business thinks about it, the way it's portrayed in the media, it could be political. What's driving these challenges?
I think overall, the defunding of public education has been a move to privatize education. The idea that we move education to more of a business model is appealing to some folks because they're going to make money at that. Yeah, if our schools keep getting privatized, so these vouchers that allow students to go to a private school or go to a charter school actually take the public education money, like that per pupil funding that I was speaking of earlier, and move it to that charter school or private school. And so when the student who has a parent who is able to transport them, has the means to be able to do that, takes their student to another school, then it pulls money away from the students who do not have parents with the means to take them to another school. So it also is just driving this
us and them.
Yeah, it's segregating our schools all over again.
Well, it separates even further the rich and the poor. It creates more of a disparity.
Right.
So the argument is, this is America. America is based on choice. And I'm able to make that choice, so I'm going to make it because the schools are failing. How do you answer that?
My first thought is life happens fast, and it doesn't take long for some folks to go from a person of means to a person with no means. And so would you want your student in that situation in a school that has a crumbling infrastructure and the teacher has to put a trash can under the roof when it rains if something were to happen to your family? And why is it fair for other people's kids to have that experience?
The argument would be they should figure it out. This is America, and so I was able to make ends meet, and I can afford my voucher. Why can't they?
Our society will function better if we all are able to have our basic needs met. And if we are not producing citizens who have those values, then where will that take us in the future? I also like to envision what could happen if we do have fully funded schools and we are producing educational programs that fully meet the needs of every student. You know, we have fully staffed classrooms and we have school nurses in every school and a psychologist in every school. What more could we accomplish if we are meeting the needs of every child?
Do you think that they've done anything wrong?
I don't feel that those people have done anything wrong. I'm one of those people. You know, I've worked hard. My parents instilled good values in me. I came up through the school system right here in Buncombe County. I have my undergrad and my master's. And I am a teacher. I teach your children, but I would not be able to afford to drive my kids to a private school and put them in that private school, even with the voucher, because it would just be unfeasible for our family.
It feels a little bit like we're building a system where we're punishing people for maybe not being fortunate.
Absolutely.
Then we have to ask ourselves, is that fair?
It's so shocking to me to come here to North Carolina and see teachers that aren't able to make ends meet. That it's not just disparity here for the students and where they can go to school. It's the whole infrastructure.
You know, Shannon, when you think about the infrastructure that we're talking about, the whole basis of whether it's the teachers, the buses, the cafeterias, the food programs, how it affects your benefits personally, what are the downstream implications of that? Like, as a society, if you take kids out of the public schools, put them in the private schools, who are most of the kids left in that situation, and what are they getting and what aren't they getting?
Yeah, we're creating an opportunity gap in our society. And so what you see is that there's higher rates of mass incarceration. There's higher rates of segregated housing. We've seen stripping of mental health opportunities and services, limited access to healthcare. And it's sort of like a domino effect here. So as we see people leaving our schools, our school board of education is actually looking at a budget amendment where our schools are losing well over $1 million because of the amount of students that we lost in enrollment this year. So they have to adjust our budget. And the first line item they're looking at is classroom teachers. And the number they're proposing to cut from our classroom teachers is about 20 positions. So as our students are leaving, they're stripping away a teacher at a time or a bus driver at a time. So it's really a domino effect here.
Now, what about homeschooling? Are people taking their kids out of homes, out of the public classroom, and that has the same effect as going to a charter school or a private school?
Absolutely. Our funding is tied to what's called ADM. It's average daily membership, I believe is what it stands for. And so when we lose that ADM, we lose the funding.
We started the show with talking about a 1997 Leandro decision that's, you know, 20, 30 years ago. How would you characterize that progress? You know, since 1997, since we haven't been funding the schools and we said we were going to fund the schools, have there been an increase in terms of negative outcomes in society, whether it's incarceration, drug use, violence, the things that typically go with not having an education?
Well, I could tell you from my perspective as someone who was in the schools as a student and now as a employee, the difference between, let's say, the early 2000s up through 2010 to now, we have seen far less staff. We have seen far less. When I say staff, I'm talking about not just classroom teachers, but assistants. So we only have assistants in our kindergarten and first grade classes. We're lucky if a school might get a second grade assistant to share. And those classrooms have needs and lots of students in them. We see higher percentages or ratios of students to teachers. So bigger class sizes. I was speaking with a teacher last night who said they could not find a third grade teacher for her school this year. And so all of the third grade teachers had to absorb a few kids. So it's the highest rate of third grade students she's ever had. At that same school, they only have 2 fifth grades when they normally have 3 to 4. And so I can just imagine that they're in the 30s. With all of these needs in our society as they increase, and we see more and more families who are experiencing traumas and experiencing difficulties around getting food on the table and whatnot, the kids bring this to the classroom.
Right.
And it comes out in the form of, you know, they're sleeping and they can't attend to the instruction, or they are needing more attention, or they're seeking that attention in disruptive ways. The number of times we have to clear out a classroom because a student is throwing chairs or ripping things off the walls is pretty high in our schools. And that comes down to, we need more mental health services. We need more staff. I had a student that was really challenging for me last year. I ended up going to the hospital a couple of times due to behaviors. And when we were trying to get a one-on-one behavior staff for this student, I was told from the superintendent that we had open positions that he couldn't fill for that behavior assistant. So it's really a challenge to meet all the needs of students when you don't have enough people.
A lot of what you're talking about is driven not by what goes on in the school, though they come with that. They come into the school with mental health challenges because of trauma or whatever they're experiencing at home. Do you feel like that's increased? The incidence rate of those kinds of issues has increased over time?
Absolutely. And because of my role as a special ed teacher, I'm also a case manager, which mm-hmm. means I connect my students to other services in the community and in the schools. And I am not able to connect students to mental health services as easily as I have been, or to help them get an appointment in a medical center as easily as I was, because our doctor's offices are understaffed as well. So appointments are pushed months out.
When I think about like how business thinks about things like this, I think about the fact that anytime you don't fund part of your business, the quality goes down. And we're talking about education from the standpoint of we don't have a good product. We're making a choice not to fund something, so maybe that's the outcome, but we're blaming the victim. We're literally saying we don't really have confidence in our schools, we love our teachers, but we're not going to fund it. We're not going to fix it. And that doesn't make sense to me. Am I missing something?
No, that's what we're looking at as well. It comes back to what is the motivation behind defunding schools? There are definitely schools of thought out there that folks who are trying to defund the schools, these privatizers, are in it because it will benefit them in the long run. They will be making money off of private schools.
When you say it's a deliberate attempt to privatize, explain a little bit about that. What does that look like?
So as the privatizers start pointing towards failing schools, like you pointed out, and it becomes like a circular thing, we see that they start increasing the number of testing, like standardized tests that we have to do to prove that our students are making the grade. And then we start showing more quote unquote proof that our schools are failing. They start taking those vouchers, the parental choice, letting those parents go to other schools. And then those private schools might be a business, an actual business. Like there are chains out there, yeah. charter schools that are chains. And the money that's made off of those private schools can go into people's pockets, or particular curricular materials. Those publishing companies are owned by some of the decision makers who are pulling the strings behind who gives schools the money.
So in some cases, you're feeling like there's corporate interest behind the move to shift education out of the public taxpayer realm and into a private world where conceivably they could charge more for taking the courses, for all of those kinds of things that become your standard privatized profit-making entity.
Absolutely. And those corporations have lobbyists, just like we have a lobbyist with our organization. But the thing about corporations who are lobbying, they have a lot of money and money talks.
What are the top two or three things that you think of when you think about improving this situation?
Yeah, well, one of the main sayings that I've used over the last couple years is that teacher working conditions, and really I should revise that to educator working conditions, meaning all public school workers, are student learning conditions. Because the way that we are able to meet student needs as professionals has decreased over the years, then naturally we're not able to meet as many student needs. And so if we want our students' learning conditions to improve, then we have to improve the working conditions of our staff. And really, that comes from funding. We have to get the funding increased. So our number one solution is looking at ways that we can fund our schools better. Because our schools are funded primarily through the state, we are really supporting the implementation of the Leandra plan. And basically, we're waiting on the new judge that has just been appointed to start to work on making our General Assembly give up that money. And the Leandra plan will be funding high quality educators. So that includes teachers, it includes psychologists, it includes behavior specialists and school nurses, all of the school workers that make our schools run. And really, there's lots of data out there that says the number one predictor of student success is having high quality staff.
I'm so hung up still on this Leandra decision. It's a generation. You have children who have been brought up without that, whose children are now in the schools. So, you know, how much do you get to the point where it's an expectation as well? So if you're a young parent now and you've grown up in this system and you were educated in this system of missing things and lacking and not being properly funded, you might not have the expectation of what it could be or should be.
Absolutely. You know, North Carolina is a big state for business. That's like our number one thing, right? I can't remember exactly who I heard this from. I feel like it was a conversation I had recently with a county commissioner where they were at a big conference where they had all these business owners and CEOs for North Carolina talking about how wonderful everything about North Carolina was and how their business was thriving. But the one complaint that they all had was workforce. They did not have enough people coming into the workforce with the appropriate amount of skills. And so that is what we're seeing. We're seeing the effect of this whole generation of folks. I'm part of that generation. I was in elementary school in the 90s, coming out of our school system.
Without having so many of the basics.
Exactly.
So people will sit there and say, but look at you. You were able to pull yourself out. And not everybody has the magic or the circumstances to pull all those pieces together. So that's just so telling to me.
So the movement to privatize, the cutting of the school funding, is actually harming American business and American productivity. So this argument then falls apart if you're saying that schools don't work, we're going to allow people to make choices, and that's going to be good for America. You're saying it's not.
To me, what happens is the haves versus the have-nots. So the haves are the ones who are going to get the better education. They're going to get privatized. They're going to be able to go to the private school or the charter school. But they're not enough of them to keep the society at the level that many of us would like to have.
Well, what I've seen happen is just that complaint from business to say, I need more qualified workers. Not everyone goes to college, and we don't need to pay everyone that much. So it feels a little bit like we have a workforce that isn't qualified to do what we needed to do because they weren't educated properly. And so no one's going to pay them the money that they could be making because they're not qualified. It's actually harming business.
Yeah, and that was the understanding I had in that conversation. Our businesses, that was their number one holdup.
For folks who are interested in privatizing, in not funding schools, the good old American worker and good old American business is being punished for that because we're not getting qualified workers to come in and help America be great and strong and productive and things like that. Is that fair?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay.
So how do we get there? Just because it's hard just to say funding. Honestly, yeah. It's like
give me the money.
It is. It's really hard for that to float. So,
well, coming back to funding, though, while most of our funding comes from the state and we're looking at Leandro, we do have a decent amount of money that comes from our local county. We need to look at how much will it take out of our county's budget to get our schools to where they are at a more functioning level so that they have, even just to maintain what we have experienced over the last few years, is going to take an increase in the funding that we've gotten locally.
What are the 2 to 3 things that you would ask a listener to think about and do?
So the first is to attend Board of Education meetings. Whether you attend in person or you're watching it on YouTube, just to be aware of what is going on. They post the agenda for the Board of Ed meetings typically a day or two ahead of the meeting. They can find it on the Buncombe County Schools website. Click on Board of Education.
I think it's important for parents and grandparents and aunts and its cousins to pay attention to that stuff because it's their children or their grandchildren or their cousins who are either in the system with children or are going to be.
And coming back to business, local business owners, that's your next employee. So paying attention to how our schools are producing our workforce.
Or your next employee has children who are going to be struggling with the circumstances around a struggling school system.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, it really does seem to me as if you're an entrepreneur, a small business owner, a corporation, it doesn't really matter. You can't rely on just college educated people to succeed. And I feel like they know that. But I do think that there's a direct correlation between education and productivity, and probably crime. And because if I'm not working, because I don't have a job, I'm going to turn to do other things. And that could be drugs, it could be crime.
And mental health. I mean, if yes. You are not able to support your family, or you're struggling with housing, it all cascades. It all circles into, you know, that positive spiral that you can get going when, you know, you have things going for you. That negative is the same way. One thing trips to another.
And I really appreciate like the connections that we're talking about here, because we as an association, as a union, really do feel like public schools are the heart of our democracy. If you think about every student in our schools across North Carolina, they all have at least one person in their life, like whether it's a parent, a grandparent, a foster parent, what have you. But if you imagine all of the people's lives that that student is involved in, really, our public schools have a ripple effect on pretty much the entire state. So that's why we say public schools are the heart of our democracy.
So how about this union? You talked about, this is the first you've mentioned the word union. And what would you say to the listeners about understanding a little bit more about the union, about maybe educators that might be listening, that might not be familiar enough with the union? You know, what might compel them to try to find more and maybe join up with you?
Right. So BCAE, Buncombe County Association of Educators, is the local chapter of North Carolina Association of Educators, NCAE. We are part of our National Education Association, which is the largest union in the country. Our union is about bringing together our public educators, all public school workers across the country and here locally across our county, so that we can, as a profession, explain and educate our community about what our schools truly need, but also lift the voices of those educators. Because when we have that collective voice, we can share our story, our message more broadly.
I'm going to say not only more broadly, but more loudly.
Some people are nervous about unions.
Unions could be very helpful to not just those workers, but to the systems in general. We talked about the education system. The healthcare system is in a similar situation.
Yeah. And I have a story about the benefit of our union. Last budget season, last school year, our school board was looking at a proposed budget from our county school system that included our local supplement into our classified staff pay. And the reason why is because North Carolina General Assembly mandated that all schools are going to raise classified staff up to $15 an hour, which is great. But they wanted to use the supplement to get our classified staff up to $15 an hour. So it was essentially taking the supplement away. So instead of 15 plus supplement, they would be making just 15. Because of the work of our union, the conversations we were having with elected officials, with our school board, with a petition that our union ran, our school board unanimously decided that we would pay our classified staff $15 an hour plus supplement. So our classified staff last year actually saw a pretty decent pay raise, right. And it was the first decent pay raise they'd had in a very long time.
So who were the classified staff, just to...
Just to clarify, so classified versus certified. Certified, it's an employee that holds a certification, like teacher, psychologist, counselor. And then classified staff would be the people who make our school run. So it's our bus drivers, our office staff, our teacher's assistants, school nutrition workers.
The message is a rising tide lifts all boats. And when you start to focus on a certain set of the population, that means one group, one set of boats gets to benefit. And I just don't know that that's what America's all about. We're underfunding a resource in any business I've ever been in or anything like that. So what doesn't get funded usually deteriorates and falls apart. But yet most Americans want public education and they support teachers, and we're defunding it. And so we're doing what we don't want to do, and it has a negative implication for business and therefore for the United States. And the solution is to fund it. And probably to advocate for teachers, advocate for kids, and advocate for a rising tide that lifts all boats. Is that?
Yeah, and I would add, advocate for you and your family. One of the strongest ways that you can advocate is sharing your personal story. So earlier I mentioned looking at the board agenda and attending the board meetings, but if you can go in person and share your personal story at the Board of Education meetings, those are powerful. Personal stories were heard loud and clear, and that was how we had that win last year of a pretty decent pay raise.
Great. I mean, I think the message is show up, folks. Show up, get engaged, improve education, support your teachers. Thank you very much, Shannon, for being here, and have a great day, everybody.